Afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us for April's Emergency and Critical Care Club webinar. I'm very pleased to introduce you to our speaker for today, European Specialist in Veterinary Anesthesia and Analgesia, Alessandra Matisse. Thank you, Alessandra. I'm now going to hand over to you.
Hello, everybody. Today, we will investigate the snake cut, and we will discuss if it is better to investigate it in conscious, sedated, or anesthetized. My plan for this webinar will be the same as your plan of action when presented with a dyspneic cut. Preparation and planning are fundamental when expecting a dyspneic cut. Once it has arrived, a brief examination will help in the localization of the problem. This webinar is not about reaching a diagnosis in the dyspneic cut, but the localization is important when you have to decide what to give and if to GI or give a sedation. Finally, we will go through the drugs we have available and which combination of drugs to choose and if doing a sedation or a GA or actually trying to investigate the cut conscious. Correct management of these cases is paramount. Stressing the cut before having stabilized it can precipitate respiratory crisis with possible dramatic consequences. One needs to have a slow and staged approach when you're presented with a dyspneic cut. First of all, life-threatening problems need to be identified and dealt with, and then one can think about the rest. It is important that you realize that you may not have an answer to all your questions, and sometimes you will often have to do presumptive medical intervention. So, let's begin with what is needed when you're expecting a dyspneic cut. So first of all, equipment has to be ready. You will need equipment to place an IV catheter, equipment to intubate the cut, and of course to do thoracocentesis and most of all oxygen supplementation, so face mask, breathing systems, whatever you have available. If you know which staff will be involved with this cut, then the staff has to be briefed. You need to make a plan. This person will be doing that. You will place an IV catheter. You will provide oxygen flow by. You need to make a very organized plan. You also need to be prepared to induce anesthesia because the cut may be so dyspneic that you may need to provide IPPV to expand those lungs and make him breathe. So have some, I don't know, some propofol or Fluxan available and some IT tubes available. As I said before, you may need to know to prepare that you have to do a thoracocentesis, so have some clippers available. And unfortunately, you may need to perform CPR. So I don't say draw up your crash drugs, but at least calculate your crash drugs and make sure you know where they are. So once the cat arrives, first of all, if he's extremely dyspneic, you need to put him in an oxygen cage or just provide him oxygen and let him be. The cat might be in distress, so just leave him, just let him there with the oxygen and observe. Look if you can see evidence of trauma, so for example, you know, some wounds or something, and that may direct you towards an RTA, so pulmonary contusion, diaphragmatic rupture and these things. And then look at the mentation of the patient. Is he in distress? Is he very depressed? So maybe is he about to crash? So you need to look at all these things from far away. Then, still in the oxygen cage, or giving oxygen flow by without stressing the patient, you can look at the breathing pattern. Look if the cat presents inspiratory effort, and often inspiratory effort is sign of upper airway disease. Look if he presents expiratory effort, and this may indicate that he has lower or smaller airway problem. Instead, if he's presented with short, shallow respiratory pattern, it may be pleural space disease. Look if he has abdominal breathing. Look at the posture. Is his neck extended, his leg open? But very often, cats which are extremely dyspneic are recumbent on the side and struggle to breathe. Look at the respiratory rate and please write it down because you will need to see if what you are doing to the cat has improved the respiratory rate after you have done some treatment. So look and write down the respiratory rate. And then listen for noises. Noises, for example, stertor, which is a soft snoring noise, is mostly sign that there is a problem in the oral or the nasopharynx. Meanwhile, a stridor, which is more harsh, high-pitched sound, it is often a problem in the larynx or the trachea. So listen to the cat and see what's happening. For example, this is a cat which was presented to us. And if you look at the video and listen to the sound, you will see that he has inspiratory effort, and you will see that he emits a sound while he is inspiring. And also you will see that he tries to open mouth breathe while he is inspiring. So let's look at the video. So there is inspiratory effort, you can see there. In.
Yeah, she's opening the mouth now.
And you can see that she opens the mouth when she tries to breathe. So this was a cat with upper respiratory tract, and if I don't remember wrong, she had a pebble in her trachea. So after you've done your brief examination with your hands off, you have to try to auscultate the cat and do a bit of a more hands-on examination. So let the cat rest in the oxygen cage and then do this hands-on examination. But do this only if the patient allows it. If you need to restrain the cat or the cat tries to run away and all these things, just don't stress the cat. Put him back in the oxygen cage, put him back on oxygen flow-by, and let him rest a little bit more. Auscultation of the chest is important. You may have increased respiratory noise, or even you may have absent respiratory noise. And absent respiratory noise, most in the upper quadrants, are signs of pneumothorax. On auscultation, the noises may be dull, and if it's dull ventrally, that may be pleural effusion, so think about that. You can also hear crackles, which are signs of pulmonary edema, or some wheezes, which are signs of, for example, cat asthma, which is very common in cats. Then auscultate the trachea. If you hear noises, because sometimes you may hear noises in the lungs, and these are actually referred from the upper respiratory tract. So if you hear some noises in the lungs, and then you listen to the trachea, and you hear the same noises but louder, then those were just referred respiratory noise from the upper respiratory tract. So listen to the trachea to see. And then I find that this a bit difficult, but it is what is reported in every book. You should do lung field percussion. So just try to percute and listen to the resonance of what you do by percussion and see if there is, for example, some pleural effusion. They will be more less resonant and more dull, lower, for example. Auscultate the heart. Is there a gallop rhythm? Is there a murmur? Is there an arrhythmia? And mostly also listen if the heart sounds muffled, so maybe there is some pleural effusion or a mass that is in between you and the heart, or if the heart sounds displaced. Sometimes when there is, for example, a diaphragmatic rupture, the heart is not where you would expect it to be on auscultation. So pay attention to this as well. Then you should palpate the pulses bilaterally and see if they are present, of course, but also feel the quality. Are they good pulses? Are they weak pulses? Feel if they're rhythmic and if they all feel the same. And also, of course, see if they're synchronous with the heartbeat. Then if the cat still allows you, look at the capillary refill time, because a prolonged capillary refill time will be a sign of poor circulation, which can be a sign of cardiac disease. And as you're doing capillary refill time, then look also at the color of these mucous membranes. Of course, this will depend a lot on the light and many other factors. And you can look if there is cyanosis, which is defined as cyanotic is like a blue mucous membrane, but in the cat, they often tend to be more gray than blue. If they're gray and if in doubt, always give oxygen supplementation. Cyanosis, unfortunately, is not very specific, and there was a study which was done with human anesthetists, and they've actually seen that very good human anesthetists, like experienced human anesthetists, were struggling to distinguish if mucous membranes were cyanotic or not, and sometimes they thought they were not. And actually the saturation was quite low. Anyway, cyanosis is not a sign of saturation. It is an indirect sign of saturation, because if you see cyanotic mucous membrane, it means that you have 5 grams per deciliter of deoxygenated hemoglobin. And this, of course, will depend on the initial hemoglobin concentration of the patient, because, for example, an anemic patient, which already has very low hemoglobin, may die without ever presenting cyanosis because he hasn't got 5 grams of deciliter of hemoglobin to desaturate, if this makes sense. If the mucous membrane instead are brick red, then this may be a sign of hypercapnia. So again, sign of hypoventilation, which can cause dyspnea. So think about that as well. Anyway, once you've done your brief hands-on examination, then put the cat back in the oxygen cage and keep him under observation. So what are the causes of tachypnea or open mouth breathing in cats? Well, of course, pain can induce tachypnea. Fear and stress can induce tachypnea. So just the fact that the cat has come to you in the car can worsen the tachypnea. Anemia, hyperthyroidism, metabolic acidosis, abdominal distension, and even obesity can cause tachypnea. Neurological diseases, mostly if they're neuromuscular diseases, can cause tachypnea and dyspnea. And the one that we will investigate more today is respiratory disease and also cardiac disease I have included in this. So respiratory diseases can be divided in several parts. You have upper respiratory tract problems, lower respiratory tract problems, lung parenchyma problems, and then you have pleural space problem effusions, for example, chest wall problems, as you see in this X-ray. So this was a cat with chest wall problem, as you can see here. And you can see that the lungs are completely compressed, so this cat was severely dyspneic. And then diaphragm problems, a diaphragmatic rupture will, of course, cause dyspnea, and you all know this. This first X-ray you can see is a cat with a pebble in its trachea. And then here you have a typical X-ray of a cat with possibly chronic lower airway disease. So the first thing you can see is that the chest is barrel-chested, and there is wide intercostal space here, mostly for a cat. Then if you look attentively, I had the radiologist telling me this because I wouldn't know this, but you can have a left rib fracture, which is very frequent in cats which are dyspneic. And also the right middle lung lobe is collapsed. So you can see all this in this X-ray, and this is very typical of chronic lower airway disease. So how will this cat present? This is the moment to get a bit of history and presentation. Of course, when they present to you, this is the most vulnerable period because, as I have repeated already several times, they will be distressed from the journey. So just leave them there, and this is the moment where you can tip them over the edge the most. So leave them there and just look at them later. You need to find out if this is acute or chronic problem, and this probably the owner will help you. Just go back, leave the cat in oxygen, and go talk to the owner. So often, unfortunately, cats are very strong animal and they hide signs of early illness until they're nearly at the edge. And that's why diseases, when you see them in cats, are often very advanced. There is also some breed predisposition things which can help you direct your diagnosis. For example, Burmese and Siamese cats have more often bronchopulmonary diseases compared to other breeds of cats. Norwegian forest cats, Maine Coon and Ragdoll, are more prone to cardiomyopathies. Or Himalayan cats, instead, are more prone to diaphragmatic hernias or probably diaphragmatic ruptures, which is a bit strange fact. But if you have one of these cats, then maybe think about these things. Once you have taken a bit of history from the owner, go back and observe the patient. How improved is the patient? So if the patient, this is the moment in which you have to do another respiratory rate and compare it to the first respiratory rate you had in the beginning. So if there is a good improvement, then it is probably pulmonary parenchyma disease. If instead the cat has not improved at all or actually became worse, then it is probably pleural space disease. This doesn't mean it is always the case, but this is something that can help you again direct your diagnosis. So if the cat has improved, then you can attempt further examination diagnostic procedure and you can do what you want, always holding oxygen in front. If it is not improved, then you have to do something before you do diagnostic procedure. You can try to do a thoracocentesis, so very low, put a needle and see if there is some fluid coming by. Or if you think that on auscultation you had crackles, then you can try to give furosemide, 2 to 4 milligrams per kilo, IV, IM, sub-Q. And if you see there is an improvement in the respiratory rate, then you can repeat this hourly if needed. If instead while you were listening, you could hear there was something like some wheezes, then you can try to give some bronchodilator, for example, terbutaline, at a dose of 0.01 milligram per kilo, given IV, IM, sub-Q, and you can repeat this every 4 hours. The arbitrary drug treatments you would do, I use furosemide and bronchodilator because actually pleural effusion and asthma are the two most common causes of dyspnea in cats which present to you. So if you have to do something without knowing, go for the most frequent. So this is, for example, a cat which arrived to us. This is still his carrier. And he arrived to us tachypneic, as you can see in this video, which should be loaded anytime soon. Here it is. So you can see that the cat is dyspneic, tachypneic. You can see fast respiratory sound. The hands were from the medic, but he got embarrassed from me taking the movie, so he examined the cat immediately after. But on auscultation, we could hear there were some wheezes. We've put the cat in the oxygen cage, and the medic went back to speak to the owner and got a bit of history. And as soon as we put the cat back in the oxygen cage, he became a bit more dyspneic. You can see in the video here, he is much more stressed, he is meowing a lot. So, comparing this video to the video before, you can say that this cat is much more in distress when he was in the oxygen cage. We tried to leave him alone, we tried to dim the lights, but nothing worked. So what we do, we put the cat back in his carrier, and we gave oxygen flow-by with the nurse holding the oxygen flow-by. If the cat was much more dyspneic and needed much higher concentration that you would obtain with oxygen flow-by, then we could have organized his cat carrier to be like an oxygen cage, because you can wrap it up in cling film, and of course you have to leave some. You have to allow some air to come out of there. But you can wrap it up, for example, in cling film and put oxygen in, and do a homemade oxygen cage in which the cat would feel comfortable. So we took the cat out of this oxygen cage because he was stressed, and stress is very bad for the cat. Anyway, as I said before, we auscultated the cat and we heard some wheezes. And therefore, we gave some furosemide to this cat without doing any x-rays. And this is the cat after we gave furosemide in a normal cage. And you can see he is much happier. If you look at the chest, he's breathing normally. He's very alert as well. So this was a very easy case in which arbitrary treatment with furosemide worked very well. But we had done a physical examination and heard wheezes, and it was quite obvious this is what the cat had. So this means that you can try and succeed without having to stress the cat. What instead if you still have to proceed with diagnostic imaging or investigation? Well, it is extremely, extremely important that you look, you weigh your risk and the benefits from your investigation. Any stress that you give to the patient will tip it over the edge, so you need to avoid to stress a dyspneic cat. One thing that is important is that you place it, or you try to place an IV cannula as soon as possible. I'm not saying pin the cat down and place an IV catheter because it is vital, but if the cat crushes, the first thing you will wish you had was not an X-ray, but an IV catheter. So to place an IV catheter, you have to do minimal restraint. Cats don't like to be held. So try to just confine them, but not restrain them too much. Always have oxygen flow by, so you will need a few people. Use quiet clippers. Cats hate clippers. So use quiet cat clippers, or even try with some scissors. And then if as soon as you try to put the catheter in, the cat jumps off, you will need to put some Emla cream. But remember that it takes up to 1 hour for full onset, so that is not really convenient, but it is a solution we have. This cat is still a black cat, but it's not the same cat as before. Was a cat which presented to us. We placed an IV catheter, and then while we were taping it, he became extremely dyspneic. So taped really quickly, and we put it back in the oxygen cage. And you can see, if you play the video, you can see how dyspneic he became, unfortunately. This is really bad. This is not what you want to do. Okay, so this cat needs to be left there, without looking at him, looking at him, but without touching him or doing anything. And he needs to calm down before you do anything. And of course, the fact that he got so stressed while we were placing an IV catheter means that probably we will need to sedate it or GA it to do something later on. Okay? So this gives you an indication. Blood work. Many people want to do blood work, but what can blood work tell you in a dyspneic cat? Really, blood work is not something you should be doing in a dyspneic cat. X-rays and CT, again, you will think, oh, I need to get a diagnosis, but do not rush. You don't want a diagnosis in a dead cat because you will do nothing about it. So don't rush. You can do X-rays or CT or whatever only when you have done everything you can to stabilize the cat. Something instead which is very good and very useful and very modern is ultrasound. Ultrasound is not invasive at all. You can just hold the cat there, as you can see, with oxygen flow by, and put the ultrasound probe on the chest. The patient will need minimal restraint, which is very good. It is very easy to supply oxygen, and it is very easy also to see if the patient has pleural effusion. So once you have seen pleural effusion, you can drain it, and then you can do what you want. You can do your chest X-rays or what you want. The more experienced you are, the more things you can see with a chest ultrasound. In more experienced people will be able to see in the left atrium and to see if it's an enlarged left atrium, sign of cardiac disease. You can also see cardiac contractility, and if the contractility is decreased, again, it's a sign of cardiac disease. If you're experienced, you can even see pneumothorax, or you can even look if the lung parenchyma is looking good or not. Of course, I would never be able to do this, for example, but what I suggest is that when you have healthy cats, you can try to put the probe there, maybe with a lot of spirit, but don't try very healthy cats, but put the probe there and try to look at healthy lungs and healthy hearts, so that when you have a cat which has cardiac disease or lung disease, you can immediately see the difference and, familiarize yourself with the difference. Or even, if you have a cat you know has cardiac disease, just go see and familiarize yourself with the cardiac disease as well. If you still think you need to do X-rays, then you need to be organized with this. So you will need an oxygen source, for example, a breathing system or, an anesthetic trolley or whatever you can have. Don't look for perfection while you do X-rays. Just look for a diagnosis. So you can see this is X-rays which are done in a referral center where everything always has to be perfect, but it is very wobbly. And that's because the cat was very mildly sedated and we just needed a diagnosis. The atmosphere has to be quiet. There has to be minimal traffic. People cannot come in and out of your X-ray room and start talking to you and asking you about things. You need to put a sign on the door or people have to know that they cannot come in. And your movements have to be very, very slow. You have to speak to the cat very calmly and hold him down very calmly. And absolutely never, ever, ever scruff a dyspneic cat. If you want, you can try to do X-rays in a box. The box has to be radiolucent, so you can use a cardboard box, or as you can see in this picture here, we used an induction box. This was actually the same cat which you have seen extreme dyspneic in the incubator first. We have put him in an induction box in which we could provide oxygen, and we have put him in an induction box in which we could provide oxygen. We just put it through the CT. Of course, most induction boxes, they have a metallic handle, so if you have to do X-rays, that will be a problem for the X-ray. Another thing you can do to do X-ray is to use a cassette, and you can put in the bottom, you can put the, sorry, it's to use the cat carrier, and in the bottom you can put the cassette, and that's very easy to do a dorsoventral X-ray. You need to minimize stress, so if the cat becomes stressed, abort, and think about something else. When you leave the cat to do the X-ray, you can restrain it with sandbags, bubble wrap, or towel. So if you have the cat in a box and you put some towels on top of him or a little sandbag on top of him, he will think that you're still holding it and he will not try to move as much as if you leave it. So this is a suggestion. Just try to avoid putting the sandbag on the chest, of course. If instead the cat is very, very handable and very nice, you can try to do X-rays out of the box and they may be a bit better quality. You will need loads of sandbags. You will probably need two people to do that, if not three. And the first view that you will do is, of course, a dorsoventral because the cat will tolerate this. If the cat has tolerated well a dorsoventral, you can try to do X-ray in lateral recumbency. So ideally, from a point of view of chest disease, of lung disease, you should put the affected side lowermost. This is because the upper side will be the lung which is more ventilated. So if you put the healthy lung if you put the cat recumbent on the healthy lung, he will be compressing the healthy lung and he will be more dyspneic. So from a point of view of ventilation, it is better to put the healthy lung uppermost. From a point of view, unfortunately, of X-ray diagnostic quality, it is better to put the problem uppermost, if this makes sense. So ventilation and diagnostic quality don't agree, but I think in this case, ventilation is a bit more important, and then you will have to read your X-rays with a bit more problems. Anyway, this is a movie. It's a bit of a long movie, but it shows you how we had two nurses and we were doing x-rays of a dyspneic cat and how calm you need to be and calming mostly for the cat. In this video, I was there because it was borderline, I need to sedate it or not, but we managed to do everything without sedating. But I had everything there to sedate the cat in case needed, and I was very indecisive because he showed a little bit of stress, but everything was fine at the end. So we'll play the video and you will see how the nurses try to calm the cat down. Immediately, oxygen flow by again. We had already done a dorsoventral X-ray in this cat. You can see he is stuck his neck. This is the moment in which I thought I might need to sedate the cat. Referral practice, they look a bit too much for perfection, but... So a sandbag on the head to replace the hand of the nurse. Lots of sandbags by Yushi.
This is supposed to be a better side, okay?
There you go. Okay. Okay, we're ready to lock them all
whenever. And then ready to run and take the X-ray. So this, to me, I was there because it was borderline when the cat was meowing, but then he stopped and he was very compliant and everything was fine. If you see that you try to do something conscious and the patient is in stress, then you have to think about sedation. The aim of sedation is not to have a flat patient, recumbent, and you can do everything you want with it. The aim of the sedation is to reduce stress, reduce pain if the cat has an RTA, for example, a bit of analgesia will always help. And the biggest aim is to take the edge off. So the cat may not look sedated, but you will be able to handle the cat much more. If you use too much sedation or too deep a sedation, then you may compromise cardiac and respiratory function, but we will go through everything together. The choice of which sedative will depend on how stable the patient is. So if he's just ever so slightly tachypneic, you can use a stronger sedative. If he is extremely tachypneic, then you need to go very light. It will also depend on how compliant the cat is. Some dyspneic cats, they don't even make you come close to them, even to place an IV catheter or to auscultate them. So in those cats, you will need to be a bit stronger with your sedation. How long and why is the cat being sedated for? Is it just an X-ray or do you suspect you will have to do something after? And again, as I said, some cats are not compliant. So if you have to go IM, of course, your sedation will have to be a bit more strong than if you already have an IV catheter and you can directly go intravenous. Something that you have to remember, not only for the dyspneic cat, but always in anesthesia, most if the patient is sick, is that you need to start light. You can always top it up, so always use a step-by-step approach. Give something, which will always work anyway. If it's not enough, give more, or give something else to make it stronger. You can always add, and it's always difficult to come back if you went a bit too far. And also another thing is that sick cats, or sick animal in general, tend to respond a bit more to anesthetic drugs. So sometimes something that may not work in a healthy patient will work a bit too much in an unhealthy patient. The first drug that comes to mind when you think about a dyspneic patient is butorphanol. And butorphanol is an opioid, which is an antagonist on the mu receptor and an agonist on the kappa receptor. This means that it will produce minimal analgesia, but mild to good sedation, which is something we like. The dose of butorphanol I normally use is 0.1 to 0.4 mg per kilo, and you can give it sub-Q, IM, or IV. The duration of action is 30 to 120 minutes, and it gives less respiratory depression than pure mu agonist. So I would use butorphanol as a first choice if the patient is non-painful, or if I have to do something which is not extremely painful. Avoid if you need to do bilateral chest strain, for example, because the cat may be painful. Or maybe give butorphanol and then after for your x-rays, and then once you've done the x-rays and you're ready to put chest strain, think about giving something a bit stronger. Another good thing about butorphanol is that it is an effective antitussive, so it will help if the cat is coughing. But remember that antitussive effect will promote mucus accumulation, so the cat will have mucus accumulation in the lung, which is not good. We had actually yesterday, we had this cat, wasn't this snake, but was a cat in which I only wanted to give butorphanol. And after we gave butorphanol IM because we couldn't place an IV catheter. And after 15 minutes, the nurse came to me and said, oh, it's not enough, I need more. But the onset of action of butorphanol is 30 minutes. So you need to wait your full 30 minutes before you try to do something. So I told the nurse, wait, give it another 15 minutes in a calm place. So we gave it another 15 minutes and the cat didn't look sedated at all. But then it was very handleable and we could very well place an IV catheter without any problems. So the cat may not look sedated, but try to do something with very calm movement and you will see that very often they will be more handleable than they were before you gave it. If the cat is in pain, has RTA, or you need to do something painful, then you need to use a pure mu agonist. And methadone is the pure mu agonist which is licensed for use in cats in the UK. The dose of methadone you can use, or that I normally use, is 0.1 to 0.4 mg per kilo, IM or IV. You can even give it sub-Q if you want. Remember that you can always top it up, so don't go directly 0.4 mg per kilo IV, or I wouldn't at least. The duration is approximately 4 hours, and again, the onset of action of methadone, if you give it IM, is approximately 20 minutes to half an hour. If you give it IV, it's a few minutes to wait. Unfortunately, methadone can cause tachypnea, so it can worsen the tachypnea of your patient, and it can cause panting. But this is seen more in dogs and less so in cats, so I wouldn't worry too much about this in cats. And methadone will give mild sedation, minimal sedation, much less than butorphanol will give. But again, it may take the edge off and it may be useful. You can always try and then you can give something else. Tafidine is another pure mu agonist, which is licensed for use in cats. And the dose is 1 to 5 mg per kilo given IM. You cannot give tafidine IV because it will cause histamine release and you absolutely do not want this. It is less potent than methadone and that's why you have to use more. And also the duration of action is up to 2 hours. One thing about tafidine that I really like is that it really, really takes the edge off. And sometimes if I don't want to use any sedative, I will use tafidine by itself. And everybody says, oh, it's not sedated, it's not sedated. And I won lots of money doing bad thing. I bet you that now we can do something. And very often you can then handle them very well. The only downside about tafidine is that you can give it, you have to give it only IM. And A, it is big, like the volume of tafidine you will give is quite big. And B, it causes pain on injection. So this may cause stress to the cat and then worsen of the dyspnea. An opioid of which you're all used to is buprenorphine, and I'm sure you all like to use buprenorphine. Buprenorphine is a partial agonist on mu receptor, which means it gives good analgesia, but it will never give you maximal analgesia, which a pure mu agonist will give you. The dose of buprenorphine is 0.01 to 0.02 milligrams per kilo, and you can give it IM, IV, sub-Q, or even in the oral transmucosal way. Some people actually advocate that the dose of buprenorphine has to be 0.03 milligrams per kilo, and I think in the future that's what we'll go up to, but at the moment we are at 0.02. The onset of action is very long. Even if you give it IV, it is 20 minutes. If you give it IM, it is up to 45 minutes. So remember that you don't give buprenorphine and then immediately try to do x-rays. You give buprenorphine, you put the cat back on oxygen, and you wait 20, 25 minutes if you give it IV. The duration of action also is very long. Some people say 3 hours, some people say 6, some 8, and some even 12. But just assess the cat and think how often you have to give it. One thing which is really, really good about buprenorphine is that in cats, it causes euphoria. So unlike dysphoria, euphoria is a happy state of mind. And I remember giving buprenorphine to cats and they're so happy, they roll around, they're happy about life. And this may help a lot if a cat is stressed, but it may be a problem if you try to do x-rays or place an IV catheter because they're just moving around happy about life. So I'm not sure how much it can help, but It is a good compromise in between sedation and analgesia. You have heard me saying many times that you give an opioid, whichever you want, butorphanol, methadone or buprenorphine, and then if it's not enough, you can give something else. So what is this something else? Well, you can use some sedative, and the first one that comes to my mind is esperomazine. Esperomazine is an alpha-1 antagonist, which means it binds to alpha-1 receptor and occupies them. It is very, very, very good because it has lots of properties, and in these ones you can have anxiolytic properties, antihistaminic properties, and antiarrhythmic properties, which are all properties you would look for in a cat which is in distress and which is dyspneic. The onset of action, unfortunately, of esperomazine is 20 to 45 minutes. So if you give it IV, you still have to wait 20 minutes. If you give it IM, you have to wait 45 minutes for the maximum onset of action. So imagine you have given buprenorphine IM, you have to wait 45 minutes, and then it is not enough, and you have to give ACP IM, and you have to wait another 45 minutes. That's 90 minutes of waiting. So this is a bit long onset. You have to think about this as well. The duration of action of esperomazine is 6 to 8 hours, and the dose I would use is 0.005 to 0.05 milligrams per kilo, which you can give IV, IM, or even sub-Q if you want. If the cat is sick or old or very young, for example, just stick to the lower doses rather than the higher doses. 0.05 milligrams per kilo is something I would give mostly in healthy cats. Very sick cats, very old cats, or very young cats may not be able to compensate for the vasodilatory effect of esperomazine, and they may present with some hypotension. So this is something that you want to avoid, mostly if the cat has cardiac disease. A very interesting thing of esperomazine, which is probably more theoretical than practical, is this adrenaline reversal. So esperomazine binds to alpha-1 receptor, as I said, and the adrenaline or noradrenaline binds to both alpha-1 and beta receptor. They're agonists on alpha-1 and beta receptor. So they bind. Adrenaline, for example, binds on alpha-1 receptor and gives vasoconstriction, but it also binds on the beta-2 and gives vasodilation. But what you see when you give adrenaline or noradrenaline is vasoconstriction because the alpha-1 effects are stronger. But what happens is, if you're given ACP, is that ACP has bound to the alpha-1 receptor and has blocked this receptor. So the beta-2 vasodilatory effects of epinephrine will prevail, and you may have hypotension and vasodilation. So if the cat has come to you after an RTA and is extremely stressed and has a lot of adrenaline going around, maybe watch out before you give esperomazine. But it has minimal effect on the respiratory system, and we are discussing this make cut, so it is something you may use in these cases. Alpha-2 agonists, for example, medetomidine and dexmedetomidine, are potent sedatives, give some analgesia, have sedative analgesic effect, but the analgesic effect will last less long than the sedative effect. The dose that I would use in a dyspneic cat is 1 to 10 micrograms per kilo, IV or IM. Also, you can give it in the oral transmucosal route. The onset of action is not that long, 5 to 15 minutes, and the duration of action is dose-dependent, but cardiovascular effects are important, and they may last longer. Cardiovascular effects are, for example, decreasing cardiac output up to 50%, bradyarrhythmias, for example, just a simple bradycardia or even second-degree AV block. There is a biphasic effect on the vessel, and you have first vasoconstriction and baroreceptor reflex bradycardia. And in a second phase, you have vasodilation or return to normal of the vessel tone with persistent bradycardia. The mucous membrane will be pale or gray because of the strong vasoconstriction, and this will make it difficult for you to assess if the cat is actually cyanotic or not. And sometimes the pulse oximeter may not read very well. Overall, alpha-2 agonists have no big effects on the respiratory system, but I think that combined with other drugs, they can worsen ventilation a lot. And they may cause emesis, which may cause further stress in the patient and further dyspnea. Sincerely, if you're worried about sedating the cat, I wouldn't think about using alpha-2 because they're a bit less safe, let's say, than using the other drugs we're talking about. But if the cat has very, very, very mild dyspnea or tachypnea, then you can think about using alpha-2 agonist. I think the first thing you all use and you all think about is ketamine midazolam. Well, here is ketamine. Ketamine is a dissociative anesthetic, And the dose I would use is 1 to 7 milligrams per kilo, IV, IM, or even oral transmucosal. Again, like Patidine, ketamine causes pain on IM injection, and therefore it can cause stress. But it is very good because it provides analgesia. It doesn't provide good muscle relaxation, so you will have to use it together with something, and very often you use it together with a benzodiazepine. But it gives minimal respiratory depression. It is actually a bronchodilator, so it is very good in cats with asthma. And it can cause, most if you use higher doses, this breathing pattern, which is an apneustic breathing. And this may confuse you thinking that the cat is not breathing very well or is even worse dyspneic, but it is the ketamine. But just think about this. You would, as I said, you would combine ketamine with a benzodiazepine, and the two you would use more often are midazolam and diazepam. None of these two are licensed for use in cats nor in dogs, so you're using these drugs off license. You can choose to use midazolam, you can choose to use diazepam. I personally prefer midazolam because it is twice as potent as diazepam. It is a better IM bioavailability. So if I don't have an IV catheter and I need to give a benzodiazepine IM, then midazolam will be absorbed much better. And also it causes less drowsiness. Midazolam causes 1 to 4 hours of drowsiness. Meanwhile, diazepam has been shown to cause up to 12 hours of drowsiness in the cat and the dog. So this is why I prefer midazolam, but they're actually interchangeable. They have minimal cardiovascular depression and minimal respiratory depression. So what else can you want? The problem is that they can still enhance respiratory effects of other drugs. So still watch the respiration when you sedate a cat. They also cause anxiolysis and sedation. So they are the best drug. But unfortunately, no drug is perfect. And benzodiazepine can cause what is called disinhibition. So a cat which is very calm, you give it a benzodiazepine and he gets very stressed or even aggressive, like you can touch him and he tries to bite you and everything. And this is because he is disinhibited. So what I do when I use benzodiazepine on their own, which I rarely do, I always use them with an opioid, I always have a stronger sedative with me to give just in case. So I've spoken about all these drugs, just gave you a mix of ingredients, but let's see some protocols so that we can see how to use them and what to do. So I would use, for example, butorphanol on its own if the cat is easily handleable. I would try to give butorphanol 0.3 milligram per kilo, IM or sub-Q or IV even, and see if this is enough. If I see that the cat is a bit scatty already before I even give it butorphanol, I would probably combine butorphanol with isoniazid. This combination may worry you because you always think, oh, isoniazid will give hypotension, all this thing. But actually, isoniazid and butorphanol is quite a safe combination if you suspect cardiac disease. Just remember, this combination will not cause recumbency unless the patient is really sick, but it will allow you to take chest x-rays with a lot of sandbags or do an ultrasound or anything. If I have a cat with pleural effusion, I don't know if he has cardiac problem, I don't know if he has just a pleural effusion, I don't know much about the cat. What I do, but for example, I have an IV catheter, what I do is I give butorphanol first, IV. If it is not enough after a few minutes, I add midazolam to the mixture, give it a few minutes. If this is not enough, or if the cat gets disinhibited so he gets more excited, then I have alfaxan ready to give IV slowly to effect. I don't want the cat to become recumbent again. I just don't want the cat to be on the roof because he's disinhibited. So that is why I have alfaxan with me. But I will not give like the 2 or the 4 milligrams per kilo. I will just give it very slowly to effect IV so that he doesn't get more stressed. Another stronger sedation protocol is ketamine midazolam that I'm sure you're all very used to use, or an opioid combined with ketamine midazolam, so butorphanol or methadone and ketamine midazolam. This combination is quite stable from a cardiovascular and respiratory point of view. It is partly antagonizable because you can antagonize the midazolam and you can antagonize the opioid if you have naloxone and flumazenil. It will last up to 30-45 minutes, so it will give you time to do most things, even put some chest strains. But what worries me of this combination is sometimes they're very deeply sedated and sometimes they're half sedated and half awake, and I'm worried that they are distressed. They see things and they cannot react, and this can make them panic a bit more inside, and we cannot see it because of the ketamine. So I prefer other sedation to this if I need to do a bit more deeper sedation, but it is very cardiovascularly safe. So what do I personally do if I have this aggressive cat, which is dyspneic, and I cannot even get a catheter in? So what I sincerely do is I rely on alprazolam. You can use alprazolam by itself, but I would personally combine it with an opioid, for example, again, butorphan or methadone. But if the cat is extremely stressed or I cannot touch it or extremely skitty, then I would use a combination of alprazolam, opioid, and midazolam. You can give this sub-Q, you can give this IM, or you can just give this iCat. A distressed dyspneic cat, the less you touch it, the better it is. This combination is off license because midazolam is not licensed and alprazolam is not licensed for IM use, but it is quite stable. It may produce deep sedation, but it is quite safe. And you have to wait up to 20 minutes after IM injection to have an onset time. Sometimes it is much faster, but sometimes you have to wait up to 20 minutes. And unfortunately, alprazolam cannot be antagonized. Since 2013 and mostly in 2015, there have been many papers published on sedation with alprazolam IM. And this is a fantastic one, the first one that you can see up here. And I wrote, as you can see, I wrote in blue, I wrote the doses because I cannot remember them all. But anyway, they used sedation with alprazolam 3 mg per kilo and butorphanol 0.2 mg per kilo. They gave this combination in the same syringe sub-Q to hyperthyroid cats, so they may have had cardiac disease and they probably were a bit nervous. And they have seen that the median sedation was, the maximum median sedation was reached 45 minutes after injection, so they had to wait up to 45 minutes. There was significant decrease in respiratory rate, and also blood pressure measurement decreased significantly, but these were not very healthy cats. Then this other paper, the second one you can see down there, we're looking at the effects of IM injection of alprazolam 2 mg per kilo and butorphanol 0.2 mg per kilo. And they were looking at the echocardiographic measurements in healthy cats. And they have seen that the sedation was so short-lasting, and by short-lasting they mean 40 minutes, which is still quite good for us. And actually, there was no clinically significant difference in the echocardiographic measurements of cat before and after sedation. So this is quite comforting, which makes us think that it is quite cardiovascularly stable. Another paper, always published in 2015, you can see here at the top, they were looking at the sedative effects of intramuscular injection of alprazolam in cats. The doses they were using was 1 to 10 milligram IM, and actually they were also using 5 milligram per kilo IV. So 1 to 10 milligrams per kilo IM and 5 milligram per kilo IV. And they saw that the higher doses, which 10 milligram per kilo we wouldn't suggest to use, were giving hypotension and tremor on recovery. Lower doses instead were cardiovascularly stable. And I think the dose they suggest, and which I suggest as well, is 2 to 2.5 milligram per kilo given IM. And this produced 40 minutes recumbency. Something very interesting that came out of this paper is the tremor on recovery. When you give alprazolam IM or IV, it can give some, it is seizure-like sometimes, but they're very, like a bit like ketamine also, they're very responsive to noise, and sometimes they can have a bit of opisthotonos, which can worry you. But just give a bit more alprazolam and everything will be fine. This last paper you can see published on the bottom, which was published in VAA in 2015, was looking at the clinical efficacy and cardiorespiratory effects of IM alprazolam, 5 milligrams per kilo, so quite a high dose, given alone or in combination with dexmedetomidine in cats, and very high dose of dexmedetomidine. They were using 20 to 40 micrograms per kilo. So what they have seen is that alprazolam IM gave good sedation in cats, but when you added that high dose of dexmedetomidine, then you had anesthesia in cats with a mild decrease in heart rate and in arterial oxygen saturation of hemoglobin. So the SpO2 was decreasing, and this is something you do not want in this snake cat. And this is a reason why I said I may stay away from alpha-2, but anesthesia is a bit like cooking. Some people prefer something, some people prefer something else. And in a dyspneic cat, I would stay away from alpha-2s. So if sedation is not enough, you may think about general anesthesia. What are the risks of general anesthesia? Well, first of all, you suppress the protective airway reflexes. You depress ventilation further. You can cause VQ mismatch, and you impair the mucociliary function, so you can have accumulation of mucus. But why would you give a GI to a cat which is dyspneic? Well, it depends a lot on the patient. I would think about GIing a cat if I need to give heavy sedation, because why would I have to give, like, why give heavy sedation or prolonged heavy sedation when giving a general anesthetic is much safer, for example. And also, I would think about the intervention which is required. I understand we're talking about investigating the dyspneic cat, but if you think the cat has a laryngeal mass or a tracheal mass, or you may have to do something, you know, something a bit more invasive, then probably GA is more suitable than just sedation. General anesthesia is often compared to a flight. So takeoff and landing are the most critical periods of a flight, and that's when the pilot is actually doing something. The rest of the time, you may not know it, but everything is on autopilot. And the same in general anesthesia. The most critical moments are induction of anesthesia and recovery from anesthesia. So in those moments, you need to be watching your cat like a hawk. In the rest, I'm not saying don't watch it, but you can breathe a bit and relax a little bit. Before you anesthetize the patient, you have to pre-oxygenate the patient, but only if this causes minimal stress. Do not stress the patient to give him oxygen, because you will cause catecholamine to go around and it will just be worse. Pre-oxygenation can also be called denitrogenation, because what you're actually doing is you're removing the nitrogen from the lungs and replacing this with oxygen. So you're aiming actually to increase the body reserve of oxygen, and mostly in the functional residual capacity. And as I said before, do not force a cat to be pre-oxygenated. If he doesn't like it, he doesn't like it. You just leave it. You can do this by mask or by flow-by, and it requires multiple minutes, like 3 minutes at least. If you use flow-by, 2 to 3 liters per minute will give you inspired oxygen of 25 to 40%. If you use a tight-fitting mask at 6 liters per minute, you can actually reach up to 70% of inspired oxygen. Unfortunately, cats don't like tight-fitting masks, so a loose face mask is better tolerated and something you may think about using more than a tight-fitting mask. This is a very interesting paper, which was published in 2009, unfortunately in dogs and not in cats, but it is true for humans, cats, and every single animal. And it was a paper comparing the time to desaturation between pre-oxygenated and non-pre-oxygenated dogs, following sedation with esperamazine and morphine and induction of anesthesia with propofol. So what they have actually seen is that they were giving 100 mL per kilo per minute via face mask for 3 minutes to these dogs. And then they were inducing anesthesia with propofol, and they were leaving the oxygen disconnected until the saturation dropped to 90%. They were measuring saturation with a pulse oximeter and with arterial blood samples. So in the non-pre-oxygenated group, the time to desaturation, so the time it took to reach 90%, was 70 seconds. Meanwhile, in the pre-oxygenated group, this took up to 300 seconds, and this shows, this demonstrates the importance of pre-oxygenation when, for example, you expect difficult intubation and you may struggle to intubate the cat and may take longer than 70 seconds. It is important that you pre-oxygenate the patient. So this and many other studies are made in healthy patients, and it is actually thought that patients in which are already respiratory compromised will be much faster to desaturate. So this is again something that tells you you need to pre-oxygenate your patients if you can. When you induce anesthesia, it depends if you think that the cat is cardiovascularly stable or not. So if you think that the problem is strictly respiratory and not cardiac, then you do what I call pop drop. You can do a fast induction, so don't give the propofol quite fast, so that you can get control of the airway quite quickly and you can ventilate the airway quite quickly. If you instead are doing a slow induction or a normal induction, just continue your oxygen supplementation as much as you can. So have someone holding the oxygen, as you can see in this picture, while you're trying to intubate the patient, because it's still improving the oxygen content of the patient. If you suspect that the cat has an upper respiratory tract obstruction, for example, a mass or swelling of the larynx or a pebble in the trachea, which is the worst case scenario, you need to prepare for difficult intubation. And this is a picture that you can see. I was waiting for a cat with upper respiratory tract dyspnea. So many tubes, even longer tubes, because you need to go beyond the mass, for example. A tracheostomy. You can see I have a urinary catheter. Sorry, tracheostomy kit. You can see I have a urinary catheter, and there is a laryngoscope. And behind the laryngoscope, you can just see I have a connector of a NITI tube. And this is a 3.5 E-tube connect, which you can connect actually at the end of your urinary catheter and provide oxygen through the urinary catheter if you cannot intubate the cat. Anyway, once you've intubated the cat, keep him in sternal because it is better for ventilation, and also it will give you better quality X-rays. So keep them in sternal and you cannot go wrong. Under general anesthesia, patients are easy to monitor because they don't move. You can check saturation. You can provide IPPV, which will recruit the alveoli which are collapsed, will expand those lungs and will help the cat breathing better. As I already mentioned several times, the recumbency is important. If you can, put the affected side lowermost, or if not, just keep them in sternal recumbency, and that will help the cat breathe. The recovery, critical moment, has to be very calm. Don't worry about resedating the patient if you think he will have a distressed recovery. Often on recovery, he will be better because you have a diagnosis, you have given drugs to help him, you have maybe drained the chest, so everything will be better on recovery. The patient has to be normothermic, and because shivering can increase the oxygen supplement, can increase the oxygen requirement up to 300%, and this is something you absolutely don't want in a cat. Provide oxygen supplementation on recovery and check saturation. Very often on recovery, cats move the tongue or curl the tongue or move the paws. They don't like you to check oxygen saturation. So if in doubt, just provide oxygen. Be ready to reintubate because they're heavily sedated or sedated just like this, they may obstruct or something bad may happen. So be ready to reintubate and monitor the patient closely until he is fully recovered. Because remember, or no, maybe you don't know, that 50% of patients who die on recovery, on anesthesia, or in the perioperative period, die on recovery. So this is the moment in which you need to watch them more close. So my conclusion about what to do with a dyspneic cat if you need to sedate it, anesthetize it, or just investigate it, is that you absolutely have to minimize stress. Delay everything you can until the patient is stable or as stable as possible. Always weigh your risk and your benefit. Will this give me actually some important information, or will oxygen be much better at the moment? And always tailor your protocol to the individual patient and don't just get a recipe and do the same thing for every single cat. If you have any questions, you can type them and I will answer them. Okay, so I have a question here. Would you not box the patient down? No, actually I wouldn't, because I understand it looks much better, but it's actually not safe to induce a patient in a box. And this is because the cat becomes very stressed. It is a very slow induction, so you cannot get hold of your airways. If you're boxing the patient down, you probably don't have an IV catheter, so it is a prolonged moment in which the cat becomes more and more respiratory depressed, stressed, and you don't have an IV access. So this is why I didn't speak about this, and it is much better to just give an IM sedation and do something IM or IV if you can. I have a second question. Are you not worried about the apnea when using propofol? And as always the same person, what about using a combination of propofol and midazolam for induction? Well, I am not worried about using propofol. Yes, it can cause apnea and hyperventilation, but I aim to get hold of those airways as soon as possible. So I am actually giving 100% oxygen and ventilating the patient. And this is another reason why I would not use a co-induction of midazolam propofol, and I have not mentioned this. It's because an induction of midazolam propofol is a slow induction. And again, I want to get hold of my airways quite fast, and therefore I'd rather go with only propofol or only alfaxan if I have to. And no more questions at the moment.
On behalf of Webinar Club, I'd like to thank Alessandra for a great presentation today. The recording and the certificate for this webinar will be available in the next few days in the members area of Webinar Club. Thank you all for attending. That's the end of the webinar.